Well, thanks very much for coming. What I'd like to do is describe to you a story of how we went through taking a look at OS X as a platform and applying configuration management to it. We have a history of configuration management in our laboratory that goes back quite a few years with Linux and Unix systems. And there's a couple of aspects of configuration management that we really consider a requirement, and that's that it's an automated configuration management system. In other words, that as much as possible, the configuration is automated at the point that it's applied, and also that the maintenance of it, and also that it is a maintainable configuration system. And this has been very doable with the systems that we've maintained over the years. There's variations of Red Hat, like CentOS and Fedora. We used to do this with IRIX as well. And we have always been happy to use CF Engine to ensure the maintainability. We started out with the usual, the jump start, the kickstart kind of things. And CF Engine allowed us to have a maintainable and automated system as well. In our lab, we've always also had, though, there were other platforms. And this other platform, the Apple operating systems, were for the most part maintained by the people that were using them, because they were had unique features to them, or they knew about them. Back before OS X, they were really, there wasn't that much to maintain for the most part in an enterprise setting. But times changed over the last several years. It really became a different operating system. And also, at the same time, it also became an operating system and a platform used by people other than the ones that had been using before. It wasn't just some graphic designers, publishers. So we had a lot of researchers that were using various Apple platforms for code development and specialized research. It was starting to be used now by managers, people taking laptops to conferences. And at the same time, we also had more security requirements being applied to them. They were starting to be noticed by the people. We had requirements now started, security technical information guides, or STIGs, that we needed to actually maintain on these systems along with the ones that we've been doing historically. So this confluence of need to apply a configuration management system and the usages of these by people that didn't know them as well in the past really made us take a look at it a little more than a year ago. The configuration management is two processes, really. There's a lot of features to it, but you're trying to do two things. You're trying to get settings to the operating system and take care of services and things that are running on it. There's a lot of ways to do that. We had a one-time script kind of thing that would work with OS X for a few years. The drawback with one-time scripts, though, is that it really doesn't maintain the configuration. It applies it, and then you don't really know where it is from that point in time, and that's not long-term a good way. Especially nowadays, security is actually based on getting the systems configured, but also then proving that they are, a certification or an audit process, you know, whatever you may have. There are lots of guides that talk about how settings can be done. There are even, if you look around, different kinds of guides from Apple or from third parties. Universities are using them. There are even Apple scripts that people have used for years as a way to configure it. But what you're doing is you're manipulating the system preferences. That's the interface that's used on OS X to get settings and services applied. And there's a variety of things. Settings like that sometimes are not effective for a couple of reasons. They either may not stay maintained over reboots, or they may only be applied per user rather than for the entire system. And depending on how the system is used, that may not be completely effective. And some of them are per user settings. And we needed to get a little bit more robust about the way that the configuration was being applied and securing on the systems. We started out really trying to find out where the system preferences are in there and getting those settings. The settings are things like how many times a person can try to log in before they get logged out. In other words, it's on or off or a value of 3 or that kind of thing. And then the other area that I'm going to talk about is the services and agents that are running on a system. And we started out with settings and taking a look at this. Now, there's a wealth of information where we got started, but there's some things that we started to notice as we're looking into this. And we found out that the OS X system has a concept of plists. These are the conf files for the OS X operating system. Some of these conf file settings and where these files are found in config guides. There are some Apple documents. A variety of enterprise websites and universities have found some of them. But not all of them are in there. So we had to look around for some of them that are in our security guidelines. They'll say, make sure that this is set this way, and it may not have been covered by anybody. So what we were doing was we were looking for these things. Now, anyone who's done this sort of thing knows you can Google around and find a lot of this over a period of time. One tool that we found that was very useful in this particular application was made by some people at an outfit called Fern Lighting. This is the system that's used. There's a lot of controls that are here. This is the system preferences interface. And what we would do is we would take a look at how things are said in the system's interface and then see if we could find further information. The people at fernlighting.com created a thing called the file system eventer. And what it will do is it will actually watch for changes in the file system as changes are made to the operating system. So as a little demonstration of this, you can turn this on and then, for instance, in this case, turn off the automatic login, which is a feature OS X has. When you first install OS X, it wants to automatically log everybody in. And in the act of turning that off, you can capture in this operation, and then you can actually see that the file that was changed is used. This was a great tool for us in trying to find out what's going on under the covers, because so much of OS X is under the covers, and we're trying to find ways to get to the files that are being used. So we could do a lot of looking into things using that tool. Once you know where some of these things are, it turns out that you can then go ahead and take a look at how these files are structured. So we're thinking, okay, we have a file that we can work with now. It's not just a GUI. It's not running Apple scripts, which we didn't think was going to work. So now we have a file that we can manipulate. This is good. So what we started to do is look into the files that are being used. We found that a lot of them are in a couple of different locations. But then when we went to look at the files, it turns out not so good. They tend to be binary format throughout the system. So we're thinking, okay, well, we're trying to find a way to script this, and what are we going to do here? So a little bit disappointing. But then as going through a lot of the people who have been trying to work with this over the past few years of OS X, we found that there are ways to work with plists. And there's some ups and downs as we proceeded through some of these tools. For example, Property List Editor is something that's provided by Apple, but it is really a developer tool. It's a GUI that's used to set building your plist for your applications, but not to be thrown out because it's useful in doing research. Plist Buddy is another tool. It's a command line tool. But this and Property List Editor are actually Xcode add-ons, and you can't always assume that that's going to be there. Xcode is the developer's package that is installed on OS X. So if you can assume that, that's good, but you don't want to actually count on it in certain situations. You can convert from binary to an XML format, but then in your scripting, what you're trying to do is determine if you want to work with the file, you have to go through a conversion and convert it back again or work with it otherwise. Not necessarily the most optimal situation. But then we found the defaults command. So Apple does provide an interface on a command line to be able to work with plist configuration files. So now we're back to good again. Things are going somewhere. Now we have something that we can actually script and actually see values. And this will work. You can actually read values in a plist, even though it is, in fact, an Apple binary file. We can actually go ahead and read this using the defaults command, do a defaults read, and you tell it what you're reading, and it will actually give you the contents of it. This is good. Things are looking up. So now what else can we do with this? So it turned out you can actually use the defaults command and read an actual individual value. You can actually go into a defaults command and delete that value, so that if you check it again, it will not be there at all. For this particular control, this is appropriate. More on that in a second. And what's even nicer is that the command will give you an exit value that is appropriate. So more scripting goodness here. So things are good. You can write plist values. So this is sounding okay. Now notice here in this example, we have a default write, and I'm going to write something to turn off the Bluetooth controller power. With an integer of 0. Or as another example, we're going to do a defaults write. And here I'm turning something off again, but now I'm doing a Boolean value of false. What we found is as we started to go through more and more controls, we found that the plists are actually written in different ways to sort of do basically the same thing. Another example here, we're trying to stop master password hints from being provided at login. But what you do here is you write an empty string to the value. Remember the first example, we actually deleted the thing to get rid of it. Another example here is I'm going to turn off IP sharing on an OS X, and here I have to write a dictionary of an enabled value with an integer of 0. So now it's within a thing. If you look at XML, you can see where the XML is going here. And it gets worse. Here we're turning off root login. I have to write an array with this value. And this was syntactically interesting, trying to get this right. Everything up here that you're looking at is turning something off. It's more than this. This is all I could fit on a screen. We've come to the conclusion for the most part that the developers are working somewhat separately. And we're really hoping in our feedback in the next year that we can sort of get them together maybe at lunch and say, hey, how about just a Boolean for all this stuff? It's on or it's off. So this was a feature of the plist things. We found a way to work with them. But each control that you look at, you have to go ahead and see, is it actually, how do I do it, and what syntax do I need to do, and then record that. Nice thing about configuration management, though, is one of the features of this is that what you're going to do is actually record it in your configuration management system. So this is going somewhere. The other major area of configuration management systems is first of all, the problems with the plist is getting the right settings. Sometimes there are multiple settings for a control. So if they'll say in your security guidelines, you need to turn this control off, you may find multiple plists or values within a plist that have to be changed. You have to dig around using fseventer, try and find things. Sometimes the settings wouldn't work. We would do settings, and then we would do testing. So we were going weeks with this, where we would apply these automated configurations, and then we would find that we didn't actually have the settings that would stay over a reboot or stay more than one user. So this was troubling, but we kept on going with it. And still, even with the way we were doing this, you could set settings, but the user had the ability to change some of them back. Now, with CF Engine, it will go ahead and keep on resetting them, but that's not a really optimal configuration to work with your users. In Linux, you're going to turn a service off. Now, as a basic example, we're going to turn Bluetooth off here in a Fedora setting. It's as simple as saying service Bluetooth stop and then check config Bluetooth off to make it stay off. In OS X, not quite as simple. You have to actually get the thing to turn off. You have to tell it that it should stay off as a device. You have to, now this is one of the larger examples, but it is not the worst example, but it fits on a screen. Tell it that the service should stay disabled, and then go ahead and tell the directory service to keep it off. You can see that syntactically it gets very interesting doing this sort of thing. It's not quite as simple as some of the systems have seen. But one of the things that this exposes up here is launch control. Launch control is a very interesting way of controlling services. It is, in fact, the implementation of OS X of getting to LaunchD, which is the service management facility for Solaris SMF, for different Linuxes like Fedora Upstart. This is their facility for taking things like the init system and inet and a certain amount of cron, putting them together, and being able to load and unload daemons. And you have an interface at the command line that you can use to do this. It also has some other features that are kind of useful. So this is interesting. This will work for us. So we started looking at how we can handle these controls. So you can say launch control, and you're going to unload a service, which means stops it. You have to tell it where it is. And you're with the dash W, you're saying stay off. So it's all kind of lumped together. So this is a useful interface. And we found that we could do the testing with this. The trick is, though, is that it doesn't give you a way to tell is it already off. And the way that OS X works is a lot of things are very inet-y. Their service is on demand, and so you can't just do a PS and see is something running. Oh, should I go ahead and turn the thing off? So what you have to do then is to check for something that's disabled. You can go to the same place where the control is, but you have to actually do a read of the plist that was using to be controlling it. So we're back to the default command again. But at least it's plists. So this is something that we had learned already with settings. So this is good. We have a way to actually see is it off. Well, this happened to be the way that Leopard worked. Now, remember, this is a year of work that we're going through this, and the merry-go-round is going around here. And we got to the point where this was working pretty good for us, and then Snow Leopard came out. If you want to check that something is disabled, we started looking at it in the same way, running tests. Nothing was working, and we're going to read the thing. But it turns out that they had moved all of the service controls to its own little separate plist somewhere. We had to find this thing, first of all. And then it turns out that you're checking for that value within one big file, and it's now a dictionary value. Took a little bit, about a week or so, of doing testing and figuring out where all this stuff was. But the same tools were still working for us. So with Apple, you have to watch out now, even from version to version, there's some variations in this. But this is something that we could work with. This was still scriptable and checkable to see if something is working, and then you could either tattle on a system where you want to maintain it or actually go ahead and turn the thing back off again if it got turned on again. So with launch control, we've got some of the same capabilities, but some of the same problems that we had with settings. So our service management and settings share some of the features. There's variations in the syntax and the locations of things, but there's a methodology that works. It's a little awkward to turn a service to see whether it's enabled or not to work with it. And then, again, like settings, the user can go back in and turn them back on again. So we were making progress, and we were finding the Apple way of getting to things, but it was still not quite really all there. One of the things that we were interested in is actually getting a system that we could lock down some of these settings. We weren't sure that it would work with everything, and as it turned out, there is a way that Apple provides to do this, and it involves using OS X Server. So if you talk to Apple people or a number of people that have been working with Macs for a while, they suggest using OS X Server Workgroup Manager. Workgroup Manager is a facility that you can run on an OS X server, and it will actually do user management. It's the Active Directory of the OS X community. You can do configuration controls on things to a certain extent. But there's quite a bit of involvement in getting an OS X server set up and maintained for especially a large community of users that are using them very differently. So there's management and implementations with doing this. So we were wondering, if this can do it, how is it doing it? We started looking under the covers a little bit. As it turns out, Apple implements a lot of the controls that are handled by this workgroup manager on the server as directory service entries on OS X systems. And as it turns out, the directory services are maintained on each client platform as well as the server. And it basically is transmitting that information over. So then we found out that there is a command line tool that can work with that directory service. So life is getting good again. We have something that we can work with. Well, it's often called DISCL, the Directory Service Command Line tool. So what could we do with this thing? Well, we did some testing with it and seeing what we could do on a local client. And it turns out that you can run commands, and it starts to look a little bit like the default command and a little bit like the launch control command, where there's lots of pathing and things like that. But you've got something, so you can say, I want to read a value that's in the directory service. They couldn't say com apple blued again like they did before. No, they have to change it, but it's still Bluetooth stuff, at least so. So you can actually say, is this disabled in there? And then you can actually get values out of it on a command line basis, and then your scripting or your configuration management system can actually tell whether it's off and needs to be off, or it needs to be on if it needs to be off, or whatever you're going to do with it. You can also set these values on the command line. Again, like before, without going into many more examples of this, it's the same sort of thing where you have type values. One will be Boolean, the next one will be an integer value to do the same sort of thing. So again, like with PLIS, there's those variations. In addition, there's only a limited number of controls that they've actually gotten so far into the system. This is referred to in the people who are working with this as MCX. It shows up in the Apple literature like that, and also by the people who are describing it, managed clients for OS X. It's a very nice system, and here's the effect of it, so that when you have an MCX control applied to something, it will either gray it out in the system preferences or leave it unusable in one way or another. This is good. So you actually have a way to have the user go to look at it, and they can't do anything with it, and then they really know it's being managed by somebody. It's not just going to revert the next hour when CF Engine runs. But it does have some of the same type and structure variations as plists, because it fundamentally is using those same plists and the same sort of XML structures that are built into it. So with these, we're hoping also, even not with the current version, with Leopard and Snow Leopard, to actually see what else we can incorporate into this. There's been a few people besides us that have been working on how to get more controls into the MCX settings besides what we already actually have. So there's hopeful. Is it just Unix? Well, pretty much as anything else is now, especially when you're looking at the desktop and laptop community of Unix, because you've got a GUI operating system on top of it. So there are some more security controls than just your fundamental services. For instance, trying to do something with GNOME or KDE on top of Fedora or on Red Hat. It gets interesting because you have to control the desktop manager in addition to the underlying system. There are features here that are very good. Plist, it's a common way to handle configurations, but on the other hand, every one that you look at, every plist or configuration management control, you have to basically figure it out, record it, and then have that in your configuration management system. Once you get used to the variations, you kind of get to, you know, is it a Boolean, is it an integer, what kind of structure is it? It'll get there. LaunchD is a nice combination. It's another nice idea, especially since that they give you an interface. Launch control could use a little bit more functionality, I think, in that there's some capability, in other words, where service can basically turn something on and off. In Fedora, for example, it can't really tell whether something's running or not. You have to go outside of it and then whack it. And there are some places where it gets kind of hard. MCX is really the place to go if they can get some more things in there, or the community working with Apple can instigate some more things in there. Because it provides that interface for the user where they see, okay, this system's being managed. I can't change whether or not this is on or off. So that's really a good thing. CF Engine has been working for us for years. We found that the meta language capability in CF Engine doesn't really work with this because there are no interfaces to these things. But we do have modules in CF Engine, so we can always do Perl. And Perl is good. So things are good. So there we are. Moving forward, if you work with OS X, you know about this already, and you may have heard about this even if you don't. They've already started to announce that the next kitty is coming down the road. But it's been announced already, and it's not coming out until the summer of next year. That is the longest lead time that I am aware of, especially in OS, in compared to the pre-OS X systems. They didn't announce anything until it was actually on the street. But this is a lot of lead time. So we do have some time for those of us that work with this on a regular basis to actually help with them, give some feedback, more things into manage controls, what can we do to actually see some more information in the command line so that we can get this thing whipped into shape. We're going to be working on what we already have, Leopard and Snow Leopard, and getting ready for Lion as it comes right along. If you need to look at something like this, I hope that if you're not doing it now or you're letting researchers or users handle OS X systems on their own, you should be aware that there's lots of stuff out there. We dug around for quite a while, but it's there. Don't be discouraged by looking at something and saying, well, AppleScript is the only way you can control this because somebody wants their phone to turn on Bluetooth when they walk up to their laptop. There's lots of enterprise-looking information out there. We have our guidelines that we're using. The people at Fern Lighting have done the FS Eventer tool and a number of other things as well. Apple has security guides, although it took 6 months after Snow Leopard was out before the Snow Leopard security guide came out. But other people are already hitting up on stuff like that. CF Engine is a good tool to work with this. Any configuration management system that can work at a low level will work for this. AFP 548 and the people at MacTech are wonderful. Lots of enterprise stuff. People at universities and large corporations are inputting information to this. Greg Neagle was particularly helpful with the information he has on his blog because he really focuses on running MCX on a local machine. And he and Ed Marzak have just published a book that's available on APress about all of that stuff that he had on the blog. So now you can get one book, one place, and it does that stuff. Or you can run OS X Server and take a lot of advantage of the how things work under the cover, because it's always nice to know how this stuff works. Greg is on the board at Mac Enterprise, and they have lots of stuff with a focus on managing lots of systems. And there's many more. So is it just Unix? Well, yes, it is. We were able to get a lot of controls. We have a lot of hope for doing more with it in the future. Don't be afraid of it if you are. And it is a manageable enterprise system, which is really what we want. We want something that we can get to the knobs and do a good job with it in an automated way. Thanks very much.
Rick Bradshaw, Argonne National Laboratory. My biggest question would be, do you start with a customized image, or do you just start with the bare bones, comes in the door with the base operating system?
We start out with the bare bones, comes in the door, because actually that's how they're coming in the door at this time. Because researchers will buy them themselves or have an administrator buy them for them, and they will install it themselves. So we assume that it's like that. But we actually were talking to some Apple people about helping us work with us to get a buying service kind of thing going where we might have it getting into imaging.
Okay. Thank you.
Lex Holt, Cancer Research UK in London. Thanks for a great talk. We've got, I guess, a couple of observations. We've got around 600-700 max, and we have exactly these kind of issues. I saw you mentioned the Casper tool in your paper. We use Casper, which is a commercial tool, but as you rightly say, you still end up having to do exactly this kind of scripting for plists and other things. We also build images for all our machines. But the second observation is, just as you're saying, people appear with a random new piece of Apple hardware all the time, and we are starting to look more seriously at reducing the amount of work we do in terms of building custom images and this level of tweaking, just because of the amount of time it takes, and we were kind of wondering if we can get by more with a kind of consumerization model where we just live with the fact that people will be bringing in a whole range of different personal devices and put the effort into other areas such as better security models or whatever.
Yeah, we've talked to we've looked at the Casper product and talked to the Jamf people and the Apple people who are partnering with them. One of the things that they say is, well, you know, you're going to have to do a lot of this stuff yourself, but we like doing this stuff ourselves. This is what we've been doing this for many years, so and we like to know where the knobs are. And so sometimes Office of Management and Budget will come out with some control. The Department of Commerce says, the NIST Security says that we have to go ahead and get done by today. Where we know, if we know where the knobs are, we have a chance of getting that done as quickly as possible. And then we can report back all that stuff saying, yes, all 700 Macs are done.
Daryl Grunow, Los Alamos National Lab. Are you using CF Engine version 3?
We're using CF Engine 2 right now.
Okay.
We have actually started talking. We've had conversations with Mark and sent him our Perl scripts, because most of it's in Perl. And they sent back some things about how we could do some, but not quite all of it, but some of it in 3, a little bit up in the middle language, like exec result and things like that.
Right.
Because they don't like shell command or command, because it doesn't converge.
Okay.
So, but we're looking at getting that, because there's some more reporting capability that would be inherent we'd like to get to.
Would you be willing to share your CF rules with the community?
Yes.
Oh, great. And will these be available, the slides, at some point?
I don't know how I can, but I will see if I can figure out some way to
okay.
do that.
Oh, great.
No, I don't have a I don't know where to put them.
Oh, give them the users.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
Have you? Mic stand. Have you looked at using? My name is Robin Landers from the University of Waterloo. Have you looked at using Deploy Studio at all to help manage different sets of custom images in an automated manager or in an automated method? For quick deployments of your variety of machinery, and then apply ongoing configuration to those, perhaps?
We talked to a couple of people that are doing that at Macworld. Janet and I went to Macworld. We were near the beginning of this, the whole thing. So we were trying to get like a feel for like what other people are doing, and that we're very interested in being able to do that kind of thing, because we like to get as much of a head start on the configuration. Especially now, we're getting more and more Mac Pros for special research usage, and we'd really like to get a better image together.
Okay, we're using Deploy Studio, so maybe we can talk.
Yep. Thank you.